No, I don't know why we have so many papers, but we do. Good morning. The next matter on the calendar for oral argument is in the matter of Minnesota Power's petition for approval of Energy Forward Resource Package. While you are all getting settled, I'll remind you that you each have 15 minutes for your argument, or let's say each table has 15 minutes for its argument, with the appellant's table having additional 5 minutes. Is there going to be some splitting up of the time?
Yes, Your Honor, there will be. For our side, I'm going to speak for 12 minutes, and Attorney Blackburn will speak for 3.
All right, and what about for the respondents?
Same thing, Your Honor. I will speak for 12 minutes, and Mr. Mueller will speak for 3.
All right. I don't know if there is a way. We'll give them a red maybe after 12, and so you'll know that you've, because we're not going to give you any more time. You sort of have to watch your own.
Sure.
Time breakdown. In terms of rebuttal, what will you be doing? Will one person be presenting rebuttal on behalf of the relators?
I will.
Okay. Yes. It's also important that you state your name and identify the party you represent.
Yes.
Have I missed anything? I don't think so. With that, counsel for our first relator, you may proceed.
Okay. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Evan Mulholland, and I represent Relators MCEA, Sierra Club, and the Union of Concerned Scientists. This case is about Minnesota Public Utilities Commission's approval of a new fossil fuel plant that Minnesota Power wants to build and operate in Superior. It's undisputed by the parties that this plant, NTEC, will impact Minnesotans and our environment. It will emit 2 million tons of carbon dioxide pollution per year, along with other harmful air pollutants, and it will contribute these new climate-damaging gases for decades, at a time when the overwhelming scientific consensus and policy enshrined in state law dictates that we need to be moving as rapidly as possible towards zero carbon. And the Commission's approval locks Minnesota's ratepayers, some that are children not even yet born, into paying for this fossil fuel plant for decades. Yet the PUC did not conduct the environmental review required by MEPA. And the Commission ignored the recommendations of Judge Cochran, the ALJ who oversaw an evidentiary hearing and pored over thousands of pages of testimony and exhibits to reach her findings and conclusions.
But that fact doesn't change our standard of review of the PUC's decision, does it?
No, it's the same standard of review. What's important, though, is that the PUC in its decision has to explain why it rejected the findings and the conclusions of the ALJ.
And you're contending it did not?
Yes, we are. I'd like to focus most of my time, though, today on MEPA, because if the court agrees that MEPA applies in this case, the court need not reach relators' other arguments on need and reasonableness on the substance of the decision. So with respect to MEPA, we want to make 3 main points. I will argue the first 2, and Attorney Blackburn will argue the third. First, A, the PUC erred when it decided MEPA did not apply because the PUC approval was not a project under law. B, the PUC erred when it decided MEPA didn't apply because the NTEC plant will be built in Wisconsin. And Attorney Blackburn will argue C, the EQB had the authority here to determine MEPA jurisdiction. So let me start with A. This is a project under MEPA. The language of MEPA is broad. MEPA does not just apply when an agency is issuing a permit, a construction permit. Under the 116D.04, MEPA applies even when a project is wholly or even partially assisted, financed, regulated, or approved, in addition to permitted, by a unit of Minnesota government. And on this point, the MEPA argument, the standard of review is de novo because it's a statutory interpretation. And no deference should be given to the PUC in their interpretation of MEPA because it's under the EQB's authority and their purview.
Although, so if it's de novo, it would be de novo for all. I mean, if it's a legal issue, isn't it?
Agreed, Your Honor. The PUC based its argument on this point on the fact that the approval, in their words, will not grant Minnesota Power permission to construct the plant, and because further permits will need to be obtained. And as a result, the PUC argues that no MEPA review was required. This is error. The PUC decision allows Minnesota Power, in Minnesota's Power's own words, I'm quoting from their petition, it allows them to undertake the development, construction, operation, and maintenance of a brand new fossil fuel plant, the NTEC plant. And that's at record.
That's wholly outside of Minnesota. Is there any case law that you would specifically point to that says that the PUC's jurisdiction, its reach, its authority would extend outside of Minnesota's borders?
Well, the PUC's authority, their jurisdiction is coextensive with MEPA's jurisdiction. The point is when MEPA applies to any major governmental action, regardless of where the physical activity is happening. So there are cases, and I think the Massey case is instructive. The Massey case is a federal case, and I think we can look at it for persuasive value. This is a case about NEPA review of an incinerator operated by the U.S. government in Antarctica. And the key point from this case is NEPA regulates government agencies. NEPA regulates the decision. The point of both NEPA and MEPA is for the government agencies to have the information they need from the environmental review before they make the decision.
So environmental considerations should inform all government action.
That is exactly what MEPA requires, Your Honor.
You know, in reading your briefs, I thought it was kind of interesting because when you're talking about whether it's a project or not, the state is saying, well, this isn't a project. These are just contracts, and we're not digging any ground. There's no construction. But when, at the same time, the state, when talking about whether there's an extraterritorial effect, said, oh, no, this doesn't have any extraterritorial effect. This is just contracts. Mm-hmm. So is there an inconsistency between those arguments? And that same inconsistency, by the way, exists with your arguments as well. How would you resolve that?
I've thought about that.
You've kind of flipped the arguments depending on what the issue is.
I've thought about that. And, Your Honor, I think the answer is just in the language of MEPA. What MEPA requires is that if there's going to be a significant environmental impact resulting from any major governmental action, the action must be preceded by an EIS. When you look at what resulting from is, we argue that this language should be given its common sense meaning. It's not like the ultimate cause or the final cause or the proximate cause. It's anything that's a natural and expected consequence of the particular government action. And here, the PUC found that the NTEC plan is needed and reasonable for Minnesota Power's customers and ratepayers. And then they approved the agreements that these agreements obligate Minnesota Power to construct this plant. Minnesota Power stands in the shoes of South Shore under the Assignment of Rights Agreement.
But isn't this to some extent like the mineral lease case in that, yes, the approval of the leases or the approval of the affiliated interest agreement is a necessary step and a first step toward, in this case, construction operation of the plant, and mineral leases, the actual exploration and mining. But in that case, our court said, no, these kind of preparatory, that there's not a specific enough project, and there's enough speculation still into what's going to happen. And we know there will be review later on if and when someone who obtains a mineral lease decides they actually want to put a shovel in the ground. Aren't we in the same situation here in the sense that Wisconsin will have to undertake before the plant is actually constructed the kind of review that Minnesota would do if the plant were being constructed in Duluth?
So, Your Honor, I'm glad you asked that question. There's two points I want to make in response. One is that any review that is done in Wisconsin did not inform the PUC. The PUC, when they made their decision, did it without environmental review, and the point of MEPA is to have it first. And then with respect to what the OHRV case in 2002 and then the following case 11 years later in the metallic lease case, the holding in those cases was that the physical activity has to be definite and site-specific. And it didn't make sense to do environmental review for a lease because we didn't know what the mine was going to look like, where it was going to be, what technology they're going to use, where they're going to do with the waste. Here it's the opposite. There is going to be no other step in Minnesota before this plant's built.
And but there will be other steps in Wisconsin.
There will be other steps in Wisconsin.
I mean, I know it's not exactly the same case, but isn't there an analogy to be drawn there?
The main difference is that we know the exact site. You know, we know that Minnesota Power owns it. We know the type of turbine they want to build. We know the source of the gas. We know the quality of the gas. We know what happens when you burn the gas in the turbine. All these things are known. Nothing is speculative or not site-specific or indefinite or unknown about the physical impacts that will result from this approval. And I want to talk about the extraterritoriality and the Dormant Commerce Clause a little bit here. Judge Hooten, you said maybe there's an inconsistency we're talking about. You know, this will happen as a result, but on the other hand, we're not doing anything in Wisconsin. And that's true. What MIPA is, it's a procedural statute. You know, it requires the PUC to have the information in front of them to do the analysis before they make their decision. And that all of those cases, you know, the Heidinger case and the Richland case, all these cases don't really control. Because here, MIPA doesn't regulate the utilities. It doesn't regulate Minnesota Power. It doesn't regulate anyone in Wisconsin.
So it would be at a later stage when, as a result of the review, a decision perhaps was made to disallow this affiliated interest agreement, then perhaps you'd have an argument that commerce has been regulated?
Well, we haven't made the argument, but if the PUC had denied this, I don't think that would have violated the Dormant Commerce Clause either. I think that the PUC has jurisdiction over Minnesota utilities using Minnesota ratepayers' money, you know, and determining whether or not it should be in their rate base and whether or not the money should be spent. That's the purpose of the PUC. You know, and the MIPA part of it is merely, it's an important law, but it doesn't regulate the construction. It doesn't tell them how to do it or what to do. It just says, before you make a decision that results in impacts to our environment, we should look at it. You know, we should analyze it, and we should have that information before us, as I'm putting myself in the shoes of the PUC for purpose of the statement. We should have this before us before we make our decisions. That's what MIPA requires.
Could I ask you this?
Because I
understand what your argument is, but what if we, I'm just looking down the road, what if Wisconsin, when they do start constructing it, comes up with a whole different analysis of the environmental impact than Minnesota? How does that get resolved?
I don't think it needs to get resolved. I think that what should have happened here is that Minnesota should have followed the review process laid out in MIPA, you know, did an EAW or an EIS, whatever they decided was proper. They couldn't have decided it didn't apply at all. So they do their EIS, and they make their decision to approve the plan or not approve the plan, informed by the environmental impact statement. Just having everyone aware of what the environmental impacts are is a value. That's really the purpose of MIPA. And if Wisconsin looked at it and there were other impacts and other environmental effects that weren't analyzed here, I don't see that as a problem. They have their own law under WEPA or whatever it's called in Wisconsin, and it's not a problem to have the two maybe slightly inconsistent. The point is that the Minnesota PUC was required to do this analysis before it made its decision.
If you had to look, I know you said you'd mention Heidinger. How would you distinguish Heidinger from this case? Why isn't Heidinger controlling? And there's two grounds that apparently the judges couldn't even agree on the grounds there. How is this case distinguishable?
Sorry to interrupt, Your Honor. I focused on the part of Heidinger that really affirmed the district court decision that said that the Next Generation Energy Act, that really regulated utilities. And because of the interstate nature of the electric grid, that these out-of-state utilities buying power from coal plants and other places, there's a way to see that as their conduct being controlled by Minnesota, such that they're wholly outside Minnesota, but it affects interstate commerce. And here, MIPA doesn't regulate anyone except for the PUC. It's just a method to require the PUC to have the environmental information before them, before they make their decision.
Right.
And I just would
expired.
Like to turn it over to Attorney
yep.
Blackburn.
You will have rebuttal opportunity.
May it please the court, my name is Paul Blackburn. I represent Relator Honor the Earth. And what we'd like to talk about is the my client submitted not one, but three separate requests for MIPA review to the PUC.
And specifically for an EAW, right? I mean, I'm confused because EIS is a separate thing, and perhaps flowing from an EAW would be a recommendation that there be an EIS. But what did you ask
We argued both, Your Honor. We said that we believe that the standard of review for an EIS is whether it would have the potential for environmental effects, whereas the standard for EAW is that it may have the potential for environmental effects. We assert that it would have the potential for environmental effects, but at a minimum, it may have potential. So we assert that we need an EIS, but it also an EAW would be a possible remedy here. So my client submitted a number of petitions. The first one was 10 months before the PUC made its decision. And the last was statutorily, we had to submit it before the final decision by the PUC, and we did so. And so once a citizen petition is submitted to the UQB, it decides whether there's going to be, whether it meets the basic standards of law, and then it passes it on to the RGU, in this case the Public Utility Commission, to make a factual finding about whether there would be significant environmental effects. So the EQB has a gatekeeper role here, where it is deciding first, you know, whether this petition even complies with the law at all. So why is there a two-step process? Why didn't they just pass? Why doesn't the law just pass this off to the RGU to make the decision about whether the MEPA applies at all, versus just the factual determination of significance? And the reason is because it doesn't make any sense to have every single RGU in the state be able to make a decision about whether MEPA applies or not. There are many different types of RGUs, including local governments, that don't have any particular expertise in MEPA. And so the statute sets it, and the statute and regulations set it up so that the EQB gets to make the initial decision.
And ultimately, it's for us, in this case, to decide whether MEPA applies, is it not?
Your Honor, it is. And at the same time, it also would be appropriate for the court to defer to the EQB's judgment in this matter, because this is what the EQB is assigned to do by state statute.
Is the record, I'm trying to, it's an extensive record, is there an explanation by the EQB as to its interpretation of the law?
I don't believe the EQB provided that. It did simply stated its opinion that MEPA did apply to the PUC's decision here. So, you know, those are the reasons why. And here, I just wanted to wrap up by saying that the EQB made its decision, and the PUC failed entirely to do the factual analysis required to do by Min Rule 1100, subpart 6. And so, you know, the PUC simply did not comply, didn't apply the policy issues, the policy factors here to the decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondents.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Ian Dobson, and I'm here representing the Public Utilities Commission. This case is about the Public Utilities Commission's decision to approve three affiliated interest agreements between Minnesota Power and South Shore Energy LLC regarding the Nemadji Trail Energy Center, or NTEC, that the Commission found were in the public interest. And the Commission
should dispute the contention that the construction and operation of NTEC may have the potential for significant environmental effects?
Your Honor, it does have the potential for significant environmental effects when we are talking about the emissions that it will, certainly the emissions that it will have and the emissions that will come into Minnesota. The important
So air and water are part of the physical environment.
So actually I would say that the air, there has not yet been a case that has ever said that the air emissions are part of the physical environment. And I think that the touch point of this case is that the cases that we have had in MEPA and the interpretation of MEPA by the EQB has always focused on that, the physical environment. We do not have a case in which any agency the court has addressed
something. But have you ever had a case, though, where it's actually a Minnesota utility approving a Minnesota company having a wholly owned subsidiary and building a plant within a few miles of the border? Is there any case you can point to where you have this scenario? That plant's not going to be built unless the PUC approves of this Minnesota company building it. Am I correct?
Your Honor, under this specific scenario, perhaps not. Now, we do not know. It's not on the record whether NTEC, you know, could potentially be built if this deal doesn't go through. And certainly Minnesota utilities do arrange for power that comes in from outside of the state, and much of that power emits resources.
Well, isn't this a distinguishing feature of this case, though, that it's actually involving the actions, the governmental actions of Minnesota, the Minnesota PUC, and a Minnesota company?
Correction. Right. Nobody has ever addressed, because nobody has ever, frankly, considered addressing whether a plant or a facility built in another state, you know, would apply to MEPA. But I do think that, you know, the cases we've cited when we talk about the MRR case and the NRA environmental assessment worksheet, the focus of MEPA is what does the government decision allow for. And in this case, Minnesota Power does not have any authority or any ability to construct anything because of this decision. All this decision does is allow Minnesota Power to step into the shoes that South Shore had and to pursue construction of this facility in Wisconsin. The other point...
The other point
I want to note is when we're talking about emissions and air emissions, the PUC did consider those, and it always considers those in resource planning. That's something that the PUC, whenever it allows a utility to obtain a resource, it considers the emissions. And so we don't have certainly the duplicative review of considering the emissions in the resource planning process that the PUC conducted and again considering those resources in a MEPA review. And we don't have that because what MEPA focuses on is the physical impacts to the environment.
So I'm to me, it seems to me that MEPA articulates a necessary process, not a necessary outcome. And that, to me, seems to be significant. I mean, as I read MEPA, it seems to broadly require that environmental issues be considered in decision-making that may have an impact on the environment. I don't understand why such a broad statute doesn't apply to 216B.48 situations. I mean, as I understand MEPA, it is supposed to be a touchstone for all kinds of government action. Are you arguing that it can never apply to the PUC's consideration of an affiliated interest agreement?
Your Honor, I'm not arguing that. It would have to depend on the facts of the case. Certainly, if a plant was built in Minnesota, under the certificate of need process.
But 218B.48 contains no territorial limitations at all. It doesn't say where the project has to be or anything like that.
Aren't you asking us
to read in a restriction that the statute doesn't contain?
No, Your Honor, and I'm not saying that you need to read a restriction into the affiliated interest statute. But in this case, with respect to MEPA, as I've said, the touchstone of MEPA is the physical manipulation of the environment. That physical manipulation will, A, not happen because of this decision. It has to, the project or the plant will have to be approved in Wisconsin. And so because Minnesota Power does not have the authority to do anything because of this decision, that would manipulate the environment. It doesn't apply, and because the preference against externality in this case applies to MEPA, and I think you can look at that in the context of the Richland-Wilkins case, in which the court found a very narrow exception when we have a cross-border project. And it said, because you have physical impacts on both sides of the line, we are going to apply both environmental review processes.
Can I get back to the point you made a moment ago, and that is that the PUC's approval of these affiliate interest agrees is not the end of the road on this project, that there's going to be environmental review in Wisconsin, and so this doesn't involve physical manipulation of the environment. But yet the rules, at least one of the rules, provides that, that a project includes a governmental action, the results of which would cause physical manipulation of the environment directly or indirectly. Mm-hmm. Doesn't the indirectly language suggest that MEPA should apply in the context of this case?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. I mean, the indirectly can be certainly, when the government is approving a private party to take an action, rather than directly building, you know, MEPA can come in. But what MEPA has always, what the case law, the EQB rules, and the statute have all contemplated is that this government decision has to result in that. And that's why we cited the MRR case and the NRA environmental assessment case. And frankly, the federal case of South Dakota v. Andrus, because in each of those cases, the government was making a decision that certainly could be interpreted as sort of furthering a process that may result in an environmental impact. But the decision itself didn't actually authorize any environmental impact, and that is the case we have here. The other reason I wanted to bring up Richland-Wilkin is because if the court now interprets that emissions into the air are going to be interpreted as a physical manipulation of the environment, a project anywhere in the country or on the globe is now could be subject to MEPA. I mean, certainly if we're talking about carbon emissions and their impact on climate, we're going to broaden that case out to anywhere on the globe instead of what it was holding was that a specific cross-border project can be subject to MEPA.
Well, can I go? I mean, I know you keep mentioning the MRR case, mm-hmm. and in that case, and there's a point made in the reply brief that in looking at that, they didn't even have a spot where mm-hmm. where the mine was going to take place. So how could there ever be an environmental impact statement or MEPA apply when it's, you know, under those circumstances when it's basically a concept, not this situation where you actually have the designated place for the construction of the plant?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Your Honor, I think that's a good point. I think what that gets to is really the practical effect of applying MEPA in that case, but. 2 points to that. First, there's nothing in MEPA or the rules that talk about site specificity. Site specificity was brought into that case as a way of, because it got to the bigger point of this decision doesn't result in an impact on the environment.
I mean, what I hear you arguing is that it's just premature to be making to require MEPA's involvement at this point.
Correct, because this decision by the commission doesn't result in that.
Decision will the commission ever make? This is, like you said, you've mm-hmm. made the point, this is not to be sited in Minnesota. It's going to be 2.5 miles into Wisconsin. And as far as I know, the affiliated interest statute is the PUC's only touch, if you will, with this project.
That's correct. On this specific fact pattern, yes, this is the only point that the PUC will touch it. And so, in this case, it brought in its resource planning factors, and so it would evaluate the environmental impacts that will occur in Minnesota.
So you say functionally the EAW process has taken place?
No, that's not what I'm saying. Not the EAW process. What I'm saying is that because the EAW process doesn't apply, here, what the commission did was bring in its resource planning process, which considers the emissions to the air, so the carbon dioxide emissions, various criteria pollutant emissions. But to get back to the practical point I was making about the MRR case, in this case, we have a different practical problem, which certainly we have a location. We have a we don't know through the permitting process how that may change. As Wisconsin goes through it, it may. But we also have the practical problem of conducting an environmental review of a facility in Wisconsin, which wasn't something that the court was having to wrestle with in either the MRR or in Ray case. So again, I think both of those cases really stand for the proposition, again, with South Dakota v. Andrus, that the decision by the government has to result in the environmental impact, which is not the case here, but there are also...
At least not directly.
Certainly not directly, correct. But also for the proposition that that these practical difficulties that they were addressing, there are different practical problems that we would have here. So I have seen my time is done, but for the reasons we've set forward in our brief.
The bottom line here is if Minnesota doesn't do anything now, it never will have the opportunity to do anything.
That's true. Not with respect to MEPA. It reviewed the emissions, but with respect to MEPA, no.
Thank you.
May it please the court, David Mueller on behalf of Minnesota Power. While regulators focus on the EQB staff and the ALJ's recommendation, the only decision that has accorded deference in this case is the Commission's decision approving the affiliate interest agreements between Minnesota Power and South Shore, its entity. And South Shore, in this case, is the project proposer, not Minnesota Power. So under MEPA, the project proposer is the one that's governed. And here, Minnesota Power is not the project proposer.
But the issue of whether MEPA applies or not, isn't that a legal issue?
It is a legal issue,
that we,
Your Honor.
That we consider de novo?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
But in this case, there is no precedent for applying MEPA outside the state of Minnesota. You know, laws in Minnesota stop at the border.
Can you point us to any case, though, where it's this scenario where you have a Minnesota power company with a subsidiary building a plant within a couple of miles of the border? Where this issue is ever
I don't think there's a specific case on that, though we've had environmental impact statements. We built a line to northern Minnesota that stops at the border, and the Department of Energy, when they did the full environmental impact statement, said our jurisdiction ends at the border. We don't go into Manitoba for looking at the impacts from Manitoba Hydro. So from an agency standpoint, they've stopped at the border.
Was that in a case involving an affiliated interest?
It was not. It was a line where Minnesota Power was permitting it with this through the commission and through the Department of Energy for a presidential permit.
How would you distinguish this case from a cross-border situation, though?
I think in a cross-border situation, the state or here would also end at the border. So whether it's a pipeline or a transmission line, the jurisdiction stops at the border there because you don't look into what happens in other states without violating extraterritorial impacts under the Dormant Commerce Clause. I mean, there's also a process in Wisconsin and there's a process in other states. States have comity with those other processes. It's not the case of Antarctica where there's no government. Here, there's a government in Wisconsin that's going through an active permitting process that is applied to this project being permitted by South Shore and Dairyland Cooperative. And then there's also there's arguments about whether the commission, there was no categorical exemption for this type of project under MEPA, but that would apply to the entire nation then under that standard that, MEPA has certain categorical exemptions for feedlots, for size of utility plants, other things, and the state doesn't say if it's in Wisconsin, it's categorically excluded. They apply it across the board. I think the final argument, Your Honor, is that there is no physical manipulation that is going to happen because of the commission's approval. NTEC is going to only get it built if permitted in Wisconsin by South Shore and Dairyland, and the only physical manipulation is going to happen because of that. Minnesota Power requests that the court affirm the commission's decisions in this matter. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right, rebuttal argument.
Thank you, Your Honors. So I want to give an example that I think will illustrate the distinction that both respondents make, a distinction that makes no difference in this case. But first I want to say that the interpretation of the word resulting from is the key part of the statute here, is too constrained. The argument is too constrained. It's not the case that merely the final construction permit is the one that has to have the MEPA review. MEPA doesn't require that. MEPA requires, what it says is, when there is potential for significant environmental impacts resulting from any major governmental action. And for instance, here's the example. By rule, by law, MEPA review precedes the construction of a new landfill in Minnesota. The PCA conducts the environmental review and approves a landfill, but there's not going to be any landfill until they get a permit from the local authority, either the town, the city, or the county, whatever controls in that particular location.
But at least there is physical manipulation of the environment in Minnesota in your scenario. It seems to me the fact that nothing is ever going to be manipulated in Minnesota, I think that's undisputed. So how do we even get to finding that there's a project to which MEPA would apply if there's not going to be physical manipulation of the environment in Minnesota?
The answer, I think, Your Honor, is that the governmental approval here will result in this manipulation of the environment, and it will occur like the shovels in the ground and the concrete will be poured in Wisconsin. That analysis has to happen. Two things have to happen. You got to analyze the effect in Wisconsin, and you also have to analyze the effect in Minnesota. I think the environment, when what MEPA requires is...
So the PUC has jurisdiction over the environmental impact to Wisconsin?
This is a problem with the way that the respondents frame the argument. The MEPA doesn't apply to the construction. MEPA doesn't apply to the utilities. MEPA applies to the PUC. So if the PUC is making a decision that affects the environment, and here it will affect the environment in Minnesota, it will affect the climate, the air emissions will some days go over to Minnesota, depending on the direction of the wind.
How likely is anything that Wisconsin might do that they would put limits in regard to anything in Minnesota?
I'm not sure. I don't know the answer to that. I don't think it's in the record, and I just don't know what Wisconsin has the authority to do over this plant.
Well, the argument's been made here that we can't do anything in Minnesota with what's going to happen in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. If you turn it around, then maybe Wisconsin can't do anything that'll happen in Minnesota. So Minnesota would be left high and dry. Nobody would be protecting Minnesota then.
Well, that...
I mean, that's the potential anyway.
Yeah, that may be the case. I think that just looking at the purpose of MEPA, which is to make sure that the environmental assessment, analyzing the environmental impacts of the decision is done before the decision, so that the decision makers have the benefit of all that information. That's really why MEPA exists. It doesn't, as you said, Your Honor, it doesn't dictate any particular outcome. That's the substance for the PUC to make their decision. But to do it without MEPA review is against the law. And that's really the argument here. And, you know, it's an academic point, I think, whether or not it's going to be, if there were a case somewhere where there was no impact at all on Minnesotans. Here, there will be an impact on Minnesotans. Like, there's going to be the environmental impact of all these air emissions, some of which are air pollutants that will reach Minnesota. The carbon impact from this plant will exist for decades. And that will affect Minnesota and Minnesotans, the impact to the climate. And to think that the climate and the atmosphere is not part of the environment, I think, is a too constrained interpretation of what MEPA says. And, you know, and the bottom line is it's a decision made in Minnesota by the Minnesota PUC. It affects Minnesota ratepayers. Minnesota ratepayers are going to pay for this plan. And Minnesota's environment is going to be impacted. I don't see it as a hard question or a close question whether or not MEPA applies here. The letter of MEPA requires MEPA review before this PUC decision, and the spirit of MEPA requires MEPA review before this decision. And we ask the case be remanded so that MEPA review can happen and the PUC can redo its decision, redo its case with the benefit of proper MEPA review. Any other questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you all
for your helpful arguments. The case was well presented, both in writing and in oral argument. We really appreciate that. We'll take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period.